Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine, and on the line I have...
Terry D. Kester.
And coming up shortly shall be Garland Nixon. I suspect he will call in and arrive at his usual delayed state. But for now, Terry, it's just you and me, and oh boy, we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, well, who else do we need? I mean, let's be real.
I mean, really. I mean, Garland, you know, he comes in every now and then, but Terry and I, of course...
He's cute.
We consider ourselves the heart of the show when he's not here. When he is here, we might change our minds. So there's two topics today, very different. Terry, you want to talk about the, shall we say, the fallout from the government shutdown scandal, and I do consider it scandalous, and where the Tea Party goes from here.
Yeah, whether the Tea Party is dying or thriving. And actually, it does tie in, I think, with your topic.
Well, you know, it may, because my topic actually has to do with bullying.
Right.
And many of you have heard about the two girls in Polk County, Florida. Oh, wait, hold on. I think Garland's finally arriving. Hold on. Is this Garland Nixon?
I'm not sure, but I think it is.
Yeah, well, you know, you're 3 minutes late. But so we harassed you in those 3 minutes.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like
you, Garland. Well, if all I get is 3 minutes of harassment this hour, then I think I can handle that. That's like 57 minutes less than normal.
That's true. We have to keep it up, Terry. So we were just discussing our topics. Terry wants to talk about the Tea Party and the fallout. I want to talk about bullying. There's a recent case in Polk County, Florida, where two girls really mercilessly taunted this other girl until she committed suicide. And talk about also how bullying affects not just school children, but the larger... and this is how I guess it relates to Terry's topic, the larger political sphere. And yep. when is intolerance, for example, when is it free speech and when is it bullying? And I think it's a very fine line between them. And I want to talk about that. Garland, you want to deal with our topics or you got one of your own?
Oh, I'm with you guys. I mean, you know, I think the line between bullying and the Tea Party, I think there's certainly a lot of discussion there.
Okay.
There's an easy segue between those two subjects.
Fair enough. Terry, why don't we start with you and we'll segue into mine. Go ahead. Tell us what your thoughts are about the future of the Tea Party.
Yeah, well, I can tell you what my hope is, but that's another story. I can't figure out, frankly, guys, if we're in a renaissance or if we're in hell. And maybe it's the same thing.
It's a hell of a renaissance.
If you've ever been to a renaissance fair, it kind of is like hell.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, you know, I mean, bullying is American. It truly, honestly is. It's our policy. It's our culture. And, you know, the Tea Party fits right in with that because the whole Tea Party is, I got mine, screw you. And the whole Tea Party is, not only do I have mine, but if you try to even use a part of my mind to help somebody else, screw you. It's a bullying attitude all the way around. And it does tie in together with what you're talking about. The question is the Republican Party going to become or remain the bullying party, which it is now? And also the question in my mind is, what can we do to, shall we say, ensure the demise of the Tea Party, or are they doing it themselves? Just a couple of statistics here, guys. I mean, as you probably know, the deficit is actually getting smaller, not bigger.
It's half of what it was 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. But Republicans with incomes above $75,000 a year, and those with college educations, they favor reducing the debt by 3-1. And a third of the people who identify themselves as Republicans or say they lean Republicans in voting are into those income or educational levels, which is kind of surprising to me. The other constituency, though, that the Tea Party has is those who are over 65 and those who are have incomes below $30,000. That group, which is a large group, of course, really want Social Security and Medicare never touched. And so they are actually opposed to what the Tea Party is saying, even though they support the Tea Party. It's a very confusing situation. Half of all Republicans do not identify themselves as Tea Party supporters. And, you know, with whites, about 70% of the whites don't want anything done to the federal budget. They're not concerned about the debt. They do not want anything done to Medicare or Social Security. So the question I'm asking, guys, is who is the remaining constituency of the Tea Party? Has the Tea Party begun to lose that constituency? And if they haven't, and if the Tea Party is actually, because of this defeat, going to try even harder and everything resurrect itself, what the heck do we do to stop the Tea Party, which is the John Birch Society of today?
Garland, why don't you take a whack at that first?
Yeah, a lot of good points there, Terry. With Social Security and Medicare and the debt and some of the contradictions between various elements of the Tea Party, and I think that's something that really needs to be explored a lot, because I think we get a lot of the answers from those contradictions. But I believe about the Tea Party, and I read a great article in the Washington Post the other day. I wish I had it with me about. From investigative reporters who kind of went down south and they went to the hardcore Tea Party members and said, what is it that's bothering you? What they found was a couple of things. Number one was they felt that their culture was under attack and they had to defend it. And that was mainly because they felt gay people were getting rights now that they shouldn't have, and that was, you know, their culture was getting turned upside down. Number two, there was a lot of issue of as far as race and as far as immigrants. They believed that all of their money was going to the government. The government.
There's a lot of truth in it. Is propaganda, and propaganda often, you know, in totalitarian states is done by, of course, the government. Propaganda in the United States is done by the Koch brothers and people like that. Mm-hmm. And it is still, they call it advertising, they call it marketing, they call it campaign. But what it is propaganda. In other words, making and stating issues so that they shift the public's position in one way or the other. And since we're caught in that incredible advertising, marketing, campaigning world, that is the tool you have to use. And you have to somehow, the Democrats have to, and Democratic supporters and liberal supporters, need to realize that they need to be pushing some kind of a message that is saying, hey, this is for you. This is for you who are struggling, you know, below the middle class and are trying to get to the middle class. This is for you with food stamps. This is for you with Medicaid. This is the government, your government, trying to help you. And you've really got to push that and give some dignity to those people, some praise to those people who are, you know, most of them are working two or three jobs. If they can get a job, their minimum wage isn't enough. And they always think, because of what the Tea Party pushes, that if any benefit is given from the government, that it's taken from them as opposed to them.
But how do you get past that mindset? I can't help but think, I remember the Tea Party people marching in front of the, I think it was the Capitol a couple years back, and there were signs, you know, saying lower the deficit and end Obamacare, and then one guy, and this is my favorite sign, who says, end the deficit, cut entitlements, hands off my Medicare. And I was like, what?
Right.
What? Hands off my, cut entitlements, hands off my Medicare. And it's like, what is Medicare? It's just like the people that, Jimmy Kimmel found outside in Los Angeles, he found a dozen of them. It's a really funny video where he asked people whether they prefer the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And lo and behold, of course, the vast majority of them, except for the one black guy, support the Affordable Care Act and don't support Obamacare. And they, of course, don't realize that they're exactly the same thing. And so I don't know how you get around the predisposition of people who are stuck in their ideological caverns. They're not going out of the cave. To quote Plato, they're not going out of the cave to see the world around them. They're sitting watching in a cave, you know, the lights flickering on the wall, and they're stuck in their own ideology. So much so that there are people that I've seen, Tea Party activists I've seen, who've admitted they've gone on welfare, who've admitted they take Social Security, who've admitted they've taken Medicare, and at the same time they're decrying those other people getting the same benefits that they themselves are getting. And how do you say to them, look, you know, there's one argument about social programs, and then there's just racism.
Go ahead, Gong first, then you, Terry.
Go ahead, Gong.
Yeah, I always remember to apply Voltaire's, quote, any belief that is not founded in reason and logic will not be swayed by it. These views are not based on conscious, rational, logical decisions. decisions. They're based on emotions, emotions of fear, emotions of anger, emotions of stereotypes and xenophobia and homophobia and all of these things. So when on the left, I think we mistakenly try, it's almost like a person that only speaks Chinese and you walk up and try to explain something in Russian. It's not going to work. So we try to give these people, quote, facts and information to change their mind when their beliefs have nothing to do with facts and information. I believe that where facts and information will work is the center, the independence. So what you do is you work on dealing with those people who are willing to have a rational conversation, and those who won't, far left or far right. If somebody wants to have a rational conversation, I think you have to move on from them and accept this is going to be my political opposition, but there's a lot of reasonable people out here. And if I get all the reasonable people, then we can get something done.
Garland makes a really good point, and it's the same point I'm making, whether you call it propaganda or whatever. These people, the people that we're talking about who are the majority of the Republican Party, simply feel left out. And you're not going to persuade all of them, nor do you need even try to persuade all of them. But you've got to persuade maybe the 10% of that group that feels left out. And you've got to do that by giving them some dignity, by giving them some credit, by helping them to get past that idea of feeling left out. And that's a compassion idea. I mean, it really honestly is. And that needs to be, you know, you say they're sitting in their caves. They're not sitting in their caves, as you know. They're sitting in front of their TV. And
same thing.
In front of their TV, and they're watching Fox. Damn Fox to hell, even though you're going to be on them later.
I am going to be on them later, but I'll talk about that in a little bit. Go ahead.
You know, but these people feel left out, and we actually live in a liberal society for the most part. Despite all the conservative flaws and economic injustice, we live in a liberal society. You know, there has been tremendous progress in terms of the gay community. There's been tremendous progress in health care. There's certainly progress in dealing with marijuana. These are all vast liberal ideas that the left out people feel even more left out as these ideas progress. So somehow we really have to, and I'm again saying it through advertising, through propaganda, which is dealing with emotions.
I'll tell you.
You've got to appeal to them on that level through advertising.
I don't think advertising is going to work, because I think advertising people see as, oh, here's the man telling me what to think. If you're a liberal, you see conservative advertising, you turn it off. You see a conservative, you see liberal advertising, you turn it off. You don't listen. You laugh. You go get a drink. I think that as I was listening to what Garland was saying about, you know, that you can't convince someone logically when they don't have beliefs founded in logic, Voltaire's maxim, that if the only thing that will persuade them is emotion, then let's go to emotion. And I was thinking back.
I think advertising is.
Well, yeah, but I think on a more personal level, I was thinking back about the Trayvon Martin case and about the differences and really the fear of the other. And that's a very ancient human condition, a fear of the other, right? I trust my family against your family, my tribe against your tribe, my nation against your nation. I don't understand your folks' religion. I don't understand your folks' culture. I don't understand why you folks look differently from what I do or practice different traditions than I do. So I don't know it. I don't understand it. I fear it. I hate it. War, etc. It seems to me
the only weapon we have.
Well, let me say this. I think that I go back to the days of desegregation when people were trying to explain, when white people were trying to explain to other white people why it's important that people of different races actually go to school together and live and work together, and that separate but equal can never be equal, even if it actually were physically equal, which it never was. That's a different argument. The point is that separation leads to this. The caverns or the people sitting at home watching one network or another. And that I think the more we mix, the more we match, the more we actually connect, the more, let's face it, blacks and whites know each other and straights and gay people know each other. The more Christians know Muslims or Jews or atheists, the more people can actually talk about their differences. I actually wonder if that might be the one barrier. And again, it may have to be personal. You got to have your best friend who's a person or a close friend who's a person of a different, you name it, race, religion, sexual orientation. I think the more that happens, maybe we can get past the factual barrier that Garland's talking about where their minds are closed to and get through to the emotional barrier. One of the things that I know from the gay rights movement, for example, is that they've done polls. And people who know gay people, people who have good friends or family members or colleagues who are gay people, 75, 80% sometimes as close as 90% support full equality for gay people, rights to marry and everything. But the people who don't claim they know someone close to them, personal friends and so forth, who are gay, they are the ones who strongly still today oppose full equality for gay people. And I just think the more we know each other, maybe that emotion of just having a friend can trump some of this factual, you know, blindness that Garland's talking about. Garland, I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, and, you know, I tell you, a few years back, I remember going to a city in the Midwest that will remain nameless, and I was just flabbergasted because of the voluntary segregation. You know, I went to this area. It's not what I'm used to. And all the white people kind of stayed in their areas to themselves, and all the black people kind of stayed in their areas to themselves. So I think, you know, when you live in an area that's multicultural and that is, you know, not an issue, you don't realize how many parts of America where that's probably not, I won't say not an option, but not likely to happen anytime soon until the culture itself changes on a macro, fashion. But I do think that...
Well, people, for example, let me just throw this out at you, Garland, and Terry, too. But people talk about affirmative action in college. And one of the things I always point out is even if you don't believe, as some don't believe, I still do, but there's some that say, well, you know, Jim Crow's over, and we don't need affirmative action for race anymore because people are basically by law treated equally. Again, I don't agree with that. That's a different argument. But when I reach those people, I say, look, diversity is a positive good. It is good to have a university where people are of different races. It's good to have a university where people are from different places. I think one of the worst things to do is to go to a state school and virtually everyone is from that state. And I don't care whether that state is Wisconsin or California or Florida or Maine. If you meet people from across the country, they're more likely to have different views. That exposure to different views and different ways of life in of itself is an important part of an education. And that's why I think just for diversity reasons alone, apart from, you know, helping past injustice, just for diversity reasons alone, it's good to have a multicultural environment in college, for example.
All of these points are valid. They truly are. And all these approaches need to be considered and need to be implemented. But you've got to remember, even something like the Civil Rights Movement began not because of reason, not because of logic. It began and succeeded because of emotion. And and this is the level we have to work on. We're not talking about the people in the middle. We're not talking even about those Republicans who don't want to be part of the Tea Party. We're talking about that large part of the population who feels really left out because that's where the Tea Party gets their power. And those are the people we have to appeal to, and we have to appeal to them emotionally. Never underestimate the power of advertising. It's what drives America, period. And advertising has nothing to do with reason. It's nothing to do with thought. It has to do with appeal. And whether it's the Civil Rights Movement back in the 60s where people are looking at their television and they're seeing these horrible, badass cops, you know, beating up people, beating up children, you know, seeing children killed in church bombings. When people are seeing that, they change their view emotionally. They say, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. The same thing happened to a large degree in the gay community in a whole realm of ways. Simple things like even the AIDS epidemic became so horrible and so frightening that anybody with any level of compassion is beginning to go, wait a minute.
Frankly, Matthew Shepard's death, I think, the crucifixion
of
this 21-year-old kid, just literally a crucifixion on a fence, I think changed a lot of minds.
Yeah.
Well, also,
that is emotion. And I'll give you one other example to never underestimate the power of advertising. Years ago, Levi's, the blue jean manufacturer,
right,
was literally going bankrupt. Literally, they couldn't sell blue jeans to save their lives. They've just fallen apart as a company. They were the largest manufacturer. They came up with the brilliant idea of 501 jeans, which you guys know all has jeans with buttons on the fly.
Right.
The last thing a guy wants is buttons on his fly when he's got to take a leap. And the point is they did a brilliant advertising campaign that changed the entire market to where Levi's became a profit-making biggest manufacturer of jeans just by persuading through advertising, through emotions, you're not a guy unless you've got buttons on your fly. They changed culture. That's the power of advertising. And the same thing can be done for those people who today feel left out and threatened.
Go ahead, Garland.
Mark, I think the point you were making about diversity, while we believe that, and we probably all, you know, one some level or form of another have agreements, remember, there are people who see the world in the exact opposite way. There are people who believe that it is best for me, it's best for my children, if they're around people who are like me, if they're around people who believe. I remember reading that there was a group of Republicans in a some, you know, down south or something, who were against what was going on in school and what they were being taught in school. And one of the things they said was, well, the problem is it teaches children things and it contradicts things that they learn from their parents, without even taking into account that some of the things they say from they learn from their parents could be incorrect. So it was, no, diversity is bad. Diverse opinions are bad. And we're dealing with people who they see the world exactly opposite that we do. And you're just not going to convince them that the way they see the world is wrong. So I think you have to end around them.
Garland, you give me a great...
And isolate them. You got to isolate them and expose them.
I just want to say, Garland, you give me a great segue to my next topic, because I want to talk about what it means when, yes, parents teach kids one thing and the schools teach them, say, that intolerance is wrong. Yes, it's true, Terry. I am going to be on Fox today at about 1:45, 1:50 Eastern time on Fox News. Everyone can turn in, because the subject is going to be bullying. And wouldn't you know it, Fox's main concern is that people with conservative, intolerant views are bullied. So that's, of course, the issue that I have to deal with on Fox. And I, you know, if y'all want to help me out and give me some pointers before I go into the ring, as it were, I'm happy to hear from you folks. If you want to help me out or comment on either the discussion on the Tea Party that we've had or the discussion on bullying to come, pick up the phone and dial 202-889-9797. 202-889-9797. This is Mark Levine, Terry DeKester, and Garland Nixon. We'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine with Terry DeKester and Garland Nixon, giving you all we can to save the world in a relatively small amount of time. We've been talking about the Tea Party.
I think we can.
And now we're moving on to my topic. And as Terry pointed out, the topics really aren't that different, the Tea Party and that of bullying. One of the reasons I'm talking about bullying, obviously, is that I am going to be on Fox News at about 1:45, 1:50 p.m. Eastern Time this afternoon. If folks want to tune in, they are very concerned that people with unpopular views, like, I don't know, intolerant views, are being bullied. And I want to talk about what is fair and what is not fair. Also, in the context, frankly, of many of you heard about the two girls in Polk County, Florida. There was apparently a dispute over a boy. That's not unusual. That happens in high school all the time. What is unusual is that these two girls taunted this other girl repeatedly over a period of 10 months, publicly, over the internet, on Facebook, and so forth, telling her, why doesn't she just go kill herself, until, tragically, a few months ago, she did. Jumped off the building and plunged to her death, at which point one of the two taunters actually wrote on Facebook, I know I forget what the exact words were, but I know I assaulted this girl, and I know she killed herself, and frankly, I don't give a F word. And then we find out, and this, by the way, when you think about it, if you know about bullying, if you study experts on bullying, should not surprise you. You find out that the girl who did the worst taunting was bullied herself by her stepmother, who beat her mercilessly and called her all kinds of names and called her worthless and so forth. What you find about bullying is that you oftentimes the bullies have been bullied, that bullying actually passes from generation to generation. In fact, I would argue, and this is my connection to the Tea Party stuff, that the Republican Party is bullying the nation because the Tea Party is bullying the Republican Party. And when you get hit a lot, you want to hit others. You know, if older brother hits middle brother gets really upset, can't hit older brother because older brother's bigger, so he hits younger brother. And that unfortunately, is the way bullying goes from one place to another. So I'm curious to know, gentlemen, what you think of my analysis and then what you think we can do to stop it.
Well, we've got to do a lot to stop it. I mean, first, one of the things we need to do is simply empower our teachers. You know in a classroom who is the bully and who isn't, or who are the bullies and who aren't. And what we've done is we've stripped our teachers of any power whatsoever, even to the point, and I know this gets into, you know, you can have abuse in any direction. But the simple fact is today you cannot simply touch a student. I have taught in substitute teaching in third grade, first grade, every single grade in school. And when you have a third grader or a second grader bullying or beating on somebody else, you can try to stop them, but legally you cannot touch them. You cannot pull the bully off of the
kid. No, no, I'm sure you can. If they're in the middle of a fight?
No, you can't. You cannot touch them. And the students, by the time they're in fifth grade or sixth grade, know that. And if you even try to stop something, they will say, hey, you're trying to touch me? You know, I mean, they know. And they know that you are powerless.
I can't think it's that severe because they have security officers in schools, I know, in some of the worst inner city schools.
That's another story. But the other thing, I mean, you're exactly right about the age. I don't know if you know this or heard this, but you got to give credit here to Grady Judd, the sheriff of Polk County, because this guy, to me, is a hero. He's arrested the mother of that older child.
He has. For her own abuse to
mother,
the bullying child.
Actually beat a child with her fist.
Yeah, I saw
in
that
her home
video.
As other children watched.
I saw that video.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, but it does start at this very early age, and that's the key. My wife was just at a seminar on this very issue with a Catholic organization that deals with abused people and homeless people. It's an enormous and wonderful organization. And they were pointing out statistically that in the first year or so of your life, or 2 years or 3 years, any violence, bullying, be it verbal, be it physical, etc., actually increases your rate of heart disease by double in your later life.
Yeah.
It increases your depression by double in your later life. So we've got to stop it at the base. We don't have to worry so much about the politics. We really need to worry about funding the social organizations, the governmental organizations on a level that take care of kids.
Interestingly, that's exactly what Fox is opposed to, and I'll tell you about that in a second. But go ahead, Garland. I know you've got stuff to say.
Yeah, two things. Number one, it was, you know, I was in law enforcement for years, so I dealt with so many times when you deal with kids, you know, you go and do arrest them, and these are the kids that are in the, you know, they're the worst kids. They're in trouble all the time. They're stealing. When you go back and deal with the parents, you just know. I mean, you don't even have to see the parents. You know what you're going to run into. So when I heard the story about this girl and how awful she was treating the other girl, I didn't have to guess what her family life was back, that what was about, because I've seen it too many times. Two things. Number one, if you are bullied by a parent, beaten, I mean, you know, mistreated, degraded, beaten, etc. Okay. One of the things that you learn is that if you have power over someone, if they're weaker than you, then they deserve to be beaten and abused, number one. And number two, you feel very powerless because this big person is doing whatever they want to you. You feel powerless. But what you learn is that person is very powerful, aren't they? So how do you feel power? By inflicting it upon someone else. So now you inflict the same thing upon a person who is mentally, emotionally, whatever, weak, and you feel that power, and man, this is great. And the girl, she's showing how tough she is to everybody, and she's feeling good, and she's feeling power. That's the problem here. Well, we have to recognize it wasn't this girl, and whether it's abuse, whether it's domestic violence, all these other things, you're always going to see that same pattern.
I think I think this connects back to the Tea Party, that these people we talked about in the first half hour, how these people feel put upon, they feel abused, whether it's true or not, they do feel it, and that's why they feel like, you know, screw the government, shut it down, screw the debt ceiling, we'll default, I don't care, burn it all to the ground, you know, I feel power right now. I mean, I was amazed to me when, you know, Boehner, after having this absolutely needless, harmful exercise that accomplished nothing on his part, but at the same time cost our economy $20-odd billion, cost our you know, workers 800,000 off their jobs, and now they have to all this stuff. And he said, well, we fought the good fight. He felt so good just fighting.
Yeah.
that he didn't look at the fact that he was accomplishing nothing. He just enjoyed the fight. So my question for both of you, whether at a micro level, whether it's kids in the playground, or at a macro level, whether it's a tea party, how do you put a stop to a cycle of abuse? I get it. I understand it. You've been bullied, and you want to bully others. How do you stop this cycle?
The way you stop it, and I don't want to sound like, you know, a preacher here preaching the same thing, but you've got to give each kid somehow or other some dignity, some sense of self-worth, and you can do that through your public institutions. You can, and this is the real problem. We've got to have much more support for our schools. You know, robbing our schools of money and blaming the teachers is just suicidal. It really is. What we've got to do is make sure that the kids who are athletically inclined, you're going to have competition, you're going to have conflict, that's part of life. You're never going to get rid of that. Everybody wants to feel a little bit better about themselves. They want to feel a little bit stronger than the other person. So you've got to find those outlets and nourish those outlets. Some kids can sing, and so by golly, they get to sing a whole lot.
Great point.
Some kids need physical exercise and need to, you know, want to play sports, and they like physical contact.
Great point.
So fine, you get them into sports. Some kids are great in spelling bees. You've got to nourish every aspect of childhood and of human development and be willing to spend the money to do that so that kids find the power in their accomplishment, not in beating somebody up.
Terry, you gave me chills because I went to this fantastic high school, I got to say, in Nashville, Tennessee. And the thing I used to brag about my high school was if you were good in sports, that was praised. If you were good in school, that was praised. If you were a good actor or singer or musician, if you were good at art, if you were good at, you know, social things, whatever someone was good at was praised at the school I was at. Now, you know, I guess that's difficult for those kids that aren't good at anything, but most kids have something they do well. I don't care whether it's knitting or ping pong. There's something generally that some kid can do well and can be proud of. And if we can recognize that and actually be proud of the things we ourselves are not good at, right? You know, and say, wow, that's really cool that you're a good singer, even though I can't, you know, I can't sing on key. That's terrific. You know, and I got things I'm good at too. I really think that's a great way for schools to help youth. I really do.
I need to support them. And I think one of the things we also need to do is recognize as a society the effect that dysfunctional families and a dysfunctional upbringing has on children and our societies. You know, if you go to a, if you talk to people who have been arrested or prisoners or go to a prison, which I've done in law enforcement, what you realize is when you hear the story of prisoner after prisoner, it's incredible. You know, they were beaten, they were abused, they were sexually abused, their parents were on drugs, their parents were harassed. It's over and over. And you realize, you know, if all of these kids had had normal, non-dysfunctional upbringings, this prison would be empty. As a society, what we don't do is recognize the importance of addressing that. I think I've always said, you know, if I was president, something I'd want to do. I'd want to put a lot of money in having public service announcements on TV, on the radio that talked about things that said, you know, do your parents yell at you and scream at you? That's not, are you yelling and screaming at your children? Are you doing this or doing that?
Yeah.
Because the problem is people in dysfunctional families who do these things, they yell, they scream, they beat up their kids. It happened to them. They don't even know it's dysfunctional. So we have to educate not individuals, not individual children. We have to educate our society. What is dysfunctional? What is bad for kids? And if you are doing this, this is bad because we are so individualistic that when a person does something and goes to prison, as an example, we do not say, well, you know, if you chase this guy's life, it was probably predictable because his parents were whatever. You know, they were both on heroin. Who wouldn't have guessed this? Well, we don't do that as a society. Therefore, we do not address the root of this problem, which I think is what we need.
Okay, so that brings me to my next point, because I am going to go on Fox in an hour, and they very much condemn the two programs that both of y'all talked about as good things, okay? They're saying that there's a New Jersey program, which, by the way, started after a New Jersey man, young man, older teen, or whatever you want to call it, filmed his gay roommate who was having sex and so embarrassed him that he killed himself. And anyway, New Jersey has a program that requires schools to learn, teachers to learn anti-bullying techniques, to have training, and to teach them to the kids, to teach kids that bullying is wrong. And this news article that was sent to me by the Fox producers from the Christian News Service argues that that's a bad idea, that it that teaching anti-bullying, sometimes when you see an ad, for example, showing bullies and saying it's wrong, that that might give kids new techniques to bully others, and that, frankly, that all this money is sort of a waste of money. Help me out, folks. I got to go on air in an hour. What should I say in response to this argument?
Back to what we were talking about before. You've got to nourish the kids at every level, and you've got to help them. Let me give you one little quick story. I was substitute teaching in middle school, which is the toughest, and I was substitute teaching in a class of special ed, which is double tough.
Yeah, it is.
I was substitute teaching with this class. It was, you know, special ed, and it was all from the particular ghetto in Alexandria. And yes, there's a ghetto in Alexandria, your hometown, sir.
Yes, I know.
And you know, there were only six kids in the class, and it was totally out of control. There was just no control, and it was centered around this one young woman, Samantha, I'll say her name was at the moment. And, you know, I had been told before by another teacher who had a lot of wisdom that when things happen in that age group, you know, look for the girl because it's the guys doing something about the girl, you know. And anyway, so Samantha's really kind of leading the chaos in the classroom. And I didn't know what to do, and this is not something I'd pre-thought. It just came spontaneously. I just shouted out at her, Samantha, how the heck do you expect to be a doctor if you keep on behaving like this? And she goes, huh? And I said, how do you expect to be a doctor someday if you keep on behaving like this? And she said, who told you I wanted to be a doctor? And I said, nobody told me, but I know you could be, and you're not going to be if you keep on behaving like this in a classroom. And she said, okay. And the whole class was quiet for the next 2 hours with no problems from any of them. It's that simple.
You know, one of the things that is raised in this article is the difference, and it's a fine line. It's really hard. I had to really think about what the difference is between bullying and teasing. One of the things that the three of us do on the Raucous Caucus is we tease each other a lot. We have a lot of fun doing it. You know, we make jokes about each other. And we do have fun, and it's all in love, and we all, you know, three are good friends and work together and love each other, and we don't mean a word we say, we're just having fun. And this article says, well, you know, sometimes bullying is the same thing as teasing, and of course it's not. And I was thinking about how you could define the difference between them. And a couple things came to my mind. One is that if the victim doesn't like it, it ain't teasing, it's bullying. Right. It's one thing to say, yeah, my friend called me a name, you know, whatever. We're good friends, and with a smile, and a kid walks away sullen or angry or crying. That's another thing. And the other thing I think is the difference between people who are relatively equal in power, all just sort of, you know, friends harassing each other, and an in-group and an out-group. And an in-group like this Polk County girl, you know, focusing on the out-group and trying to really put her down. And I think one of the main differences is, I see, to me, you could see it. If you're a teacher, you can absolutely see the difference between bullying and teasing. It is, though, hard to define as a matter of law or school policy.
I don't think it is.
Garland, you first, and then we'll go back to Terry. Go ahead, Garland.
Two things. Number one, because it's like all words in themselves have absolutely no meaning. They are given a meaning by the context in which they are used. So the difference between bullying and teasing is about context. You can say the same, two people can say the same thing, and one's bullying and one's teasing. Bullying is, I mean, teasing, case for you know, jovial teasing, as opposed to bullying, which is often a clandestine attack. It's, you know, it's often clandestine. It's disguised as humor. It's a vicious attack disguised as humor, as opposed to just simple humor. What we do is humor. There is no disguise behind it. There is nothing underneath it. We're just teasing each other and playing with each other, number one. Number two, going on Fox and what you have to say. The first thing I'd say is this, Mark. You got to understand who you're up against. These people, conservatives, don't believe in any social program because they will not accept ever that there are social problems that cause people to do things. It is an individual, and that individual is making a bad choice as an individual, and they are responsible for it. Therefore, the only way to fix it is to punish that individual. So they don't believe in fixing problems in a on a broad range. They believe that you, quote, punish an individual And that individual, as a result of the punishment, will do something right. It's a worldview that says there are only two things. There's punishment and there's reward. There's nothing else. And that's what's why you can't really get through to them.
Terry, go ahead.
Very good point, Garland. Very good point. Yeah, I mean, it is it's not as complex an issue as the opponents, particularly to trying to do anything, want to make it. And let me give you an example. Trash talk is something that's pretty common in sports. And the kind of back and forth that you and I guys do, you know, we're kind of equal in a way in that regard. And we do respect each other. So if you've got two football players, you know, and they're facing each other on the line and they're doing some trash talking, I mean, that's in a sense okay. Not that I'm in love with trash talking, but that's okay because they're essentially equal. They're going to, you know, compete. Now, if that same football player walks off the field and does it to one of the fans who weighs, you know, 120 pounds and is 5'4", that's bullying. And you
right.
can see
I think
difference.
It is very much about equality versus a power structure. It's one thing with a colleague, and it's quite different when you got a group going up against someone else. And let me just raise this last point, because I know they're going to raise it on Fox News. And again, I appreciate your insight, gentlemen. I want to hear your views on it. They're going to argue that basically when people attack people's views, that somehow that is not that is bullying. And I want to say this. It's one thing to attack someone for being different, having a different religion or a different color skin or a different sexual orientation or, frankly, someone who's either disabled or not good at sports or not good at anything, academics or whatever people are picking on people for. Those are things that can't be helped. Those are things that are just who someone is. It's quite different than attacking someone for their views. I am fine with attacking someone for their views, particularly when the views themselves are intolerant. Now, obviously, I don't mean physical attacks, but to me, social ostracism of someone who has an extreme view that promotes intolerance is a good thing. You're fighting speech with speech. This is what I plan to tell Fox when they say, oh, well, you know, these kids were attacked for, you know, their views. It seems to me that, look, if you express views, you should be willing to be have people respond for those views, and we should very much distinguish between views that are based on an issue, you know, the deficit spending, a relatively abstract issue, though I know we care about it, and people who have views that attack specific human beings and want to deny them equality. Because when that happens, yeah, the Ku Klux Klan has a right to march, but we absolutely have a right to countermarch and to call them hateful things because they're hateful people. Go ahead. Who wants to take that?
So I really understand. You're saying they're going to argue that people shouldn't be attacked for their views?
I think they're going to give me some obscure example of some school who shut down some kid who expressed kind of a hateful, intolerant view. And my view is this, that basically when it comes to free speech, that the older you are, the more likely people can have sort of free speech where they can express even hateful views and so forth. But in a school setting, and particularly the younger you are, that hateful views can be kept out of the classroom. You can do whatever you want in your spare time, but that you can actually say, I'm sorry, that view, that intolerant view has no place in our classroom. I'm fine with that.
In a civil society, there are surely times when a person should be admonished for particular views in a given setting. So, and of all people, these people saying you shouldn't attack somebody for their rules, you know, that's like an alcoholic saying that, you know, nobody should ever drink, you know, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what they're going to say. They're going to say that this kid wrote a piece opposing the right of gay people to marry, or this kid wrote a piece that was, you know, against abortion in all contexts, and they were attacked mercilessly. And my view is this, you know, when you express your views publicly, you should be willing to be attacked for your views, not ad hominem attacks. Don't attack the person. But you can say someone that's a bigoted point of view, you know, but that's different from saying that you know, I'm going to kill you, or I'm going to hurt you or whatever. When you put I put my views out there all the time. I'm a talk radio host. The two of you do the same thing. I am fine with people calling in and attacking me and saying, Mark, I think you're dead wrong. Okay. And people do that and I'm fine with it. I actually enjoy the debate. What I don't appreciate, and it happens occasionally, and it happens to both of you, is when someone calls in and says, you're a bad person or you're a jerk or you're just sort of an insult that's an ad hominem attack that doesn't have to do with the views you expressed. Views are fair game, attacking people or not.
Yeah, you've got, you know, you could have an interesting show. But I think the first thing you want to do, Mark, at least what I would hope I would do, and oftentimes I forget, is to essentially agree with them, disarm them. And begin with, you know, well, one, obviously thanking them for having you on the show. Yes, there is a fine line between freedom of speech and sarcasm and hurt and bullying. These are all fine lines, and we need to have these discussions, gentlemen, that we're having at this moment. But then get on to actually what the sheriff here, and I'm quoting the sheriff, Sheriff Grady Judd, most everyone in this country has been bullied at one time or another. Everyone understands the torment and the fear and the angst of being bullied. Everyone can identify. That is true. And the guys that you're going to be debating with, or the women you're going to be debating with, they at some point in their life know exactly what bullying is. We all know. We know what obscenity is. We know what pornography is. We know you can't yell fire in a theater. We know what bullying is. Let's not pretend that we don't know what it is.
That's a good point, that everyone has been bullied at some point in their lives. Everyone can be bullied. None of us are perfect in everything. And so all of us remember from school and from adulthood what bullying feels like. And this is a something that for the world would be a better place if there was a little less bullying. It's just it's a fact.
And the other part is this. You know, do we take steps to ensure that we live in a civil society, or do we just live in a jungle where anyone can treat anyone else the way they want to, and, you know, whoever has the most strength wins? Well, that's a good question, and I think that this is appropriate. It's an appropriate question here, because if you're saying we should not take the steps we need to do to ensure that everyone has, you know, the general welfare. This is about the general welfare. This is about everybody having an opportunity for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Can you pursue happiness if you're being mistreated, teased, and bullied? And is it your right to mistreat and tease, or can our society say your right stops where, you know, your fist connects that person's face, or where your bullying starts to stop another person from being able to pursue their happiness?
And it has to stop early. We have to have authority figures like teachers and parents teach kids, as kids, that this kind of behavior is wrong. Because once these kids are adults, you can't stop it absent people, you know, physically causing damage and going to jail. In fact, I wondered, until I saw that video that you talked about, Terry, about the stepmom who beat her daughter, I wondered if there was any way to punish the parents. I wasn't sure there was. The parents were saying, my girl didn't do anything wrong, the girl that taunted the other girl to kill herself. And I was like, well, she did use free speech. I don't like it, but I can't quite picture it. And then, of course, you find the mother physically abused her, and it's like, okay, well, that you can punish. But when, and we don't have much time left, and maybe go a little bit over, but I just, my question for both of you is, legally, how the heck do you punish hateful speech? I mean, we have hate crimes laws, which I fully support, where someone uses hateful speech and then acts on it in a criminal way. That you can punish, and I'm glad we do. But when these two girls taunt this, and I don't know all the facts, but let's just say that all they did was verbal, and all they did was say awful, terrible things. You should go kill yourself. You are worthless. You're a terrible human being. You deserve to die. All these things, just that. And then she kills herself. Is there any, I mean, I can think of 1,000 social remedies that we should all use. Is there a legal remedy, or are we just out of luck here? If we can go a little bit over, which we rarely do, but let's do that. I'd love for both of you to address that question. Is there a legal remedy to bullying?
There are, you know, a number of states that have very strong laws about bullying, states and liberal and conservative.
That's
states.
About verbal bullying, of course. Physical bullying is easy to punish. You could just, yeah, that's assault. Go ahead, Terry.
You know, again, I really think it boils down to if the teachers are empowered, if the social workers in the schools are empowered, if the counselors are empowered, because that is our only basic resource. Yes, and programs like Head Start and things like that. My sister-in-law here in Oregon works in social services, and she works with mothers who are totally unprepared to have a baby, usually an illegitimate child, et cetera, et cetera. They have no money. They have nothing. She works with them on how to treat a child, how to raise a baby. This is what she does. And customarily, she spends up to 3 years dealing with a young mother, visiting them monthly, coaching them how not to use anger, et cetera, et cetera. 3 years. This is a service she provides, and she's dedicated to it, and she is fantastic. And, of course, the state of Oregon, like everybody else, has defunded it.
So this is something we can do through teachers and social workers and parents, but probably not through judges and police.
No, you can't stop it. It's too late, like you said. It's too late.
Okay. Colin, go ahead.
There are some things you can do, because remember, you do have DJ, you know, in every state's going to have a Department of Juvenile Services where, some level of legal actions can be taken against juveniles. And I think you can come up with the equivalent, legislatively, the equivalent of stalking laws.
That's what Polk County is doing. They're doing a third degree stalking, I think, is the charge against these girls.
But Terry's point is important, and that is, educating teachers and educating people in that environment to see it and to have, and when they see it, to have a definitive course of action so that when they see it, they know they do this, then this, then this, you know, steps of meeting with the parents, and so that everybody knows if this goes on, at some point when this step is taken and this one, Department of Juvenile Services is going to come in, and this child, if they do it again, they're going to be charged with something, and they're going to be in front of a juvenile, you know, they're going to be in front of a man, a magistrate or who in that particular court. So I think Terry's right. You're both right. You start with a process of training the teachers and the caregivers of kids, but that there is an orderly process where at some point, if it doesn't stop, then, you know, they're the price to pay.
I'll tell you, it is a very tough legal question, though. But I want to thank you, Garland and Terry, for helping me out. Hopefully, I will do you both proud. And in about 45 minutes, if you do want to watch it, it'll be on Fox News on your cable channel. And I'm going to be talking about bullying. And I have a feeling the discussion will be very different from the one you just heard right here on the Raucous Caucus. But that's why we have We Act Radio. That's why we have AM 1480. That's why we have the Raucous Caucus coming to you every Sunday at noon. And, of course, you should tune in next week for another edition of the Raucous Caucus at noon. Terry, if they want to find you, how do they do that?
Dr. Dr. of Democracy at AOL.com.
And Garland? Are you there, Garland? Did Garland already leave us?
Yes, I am. At Garland Nixon on Twitter or GarlandN at gmail.com.
And I am at Mark Levine Talk on Twitter. My Facebook is facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. My website is MarkLevineTalk.com. Please comment. Let us know what you think about shows. Let us know that you're there and listening. And let us know what you want to hear on another edition of the Raucous Caucus. That is our time, gentlemen. I want to thank you both for coming on. Coming up now, while I'm going to be on Fox, I'm going to play us an inside scoop that I did just 2 days ago. So it's fresh. It has to do, of course, with the government shutdown, where I bring in Republicans who come on air with me to talk about, well, the demise of their party. And if you want to hear what they have to say and how we had that debate, don't miss the inside scoop coming up next right after this. Thank you, gentlemen.